And that's just it. I'm not some moon-eyed Padawan. Not anymore. I know personal ties can work against us. We endanger them sometimes because of the nature of our duties. And worse, they become possessions to be protected and obsessed over. I admit I do wonder sometimes if that sells Jedi short. Not everyone is Anakin. And if the simple act of caring deeply for a person, especially someone as good as Padme, is destructive in principle, then the Force has a peculiar view of what constitutes good and evil. You told me yourself that the Jedi weren't always against relationships. And consider, families are strong in the Force. Does the Force really understand what it wants? No matter. I understand myself. I can give up love. I have given up love. But I wasn't prepared to give up the thing that I had instead. Community. I've lived my life in the structure of the Jedi Order. Yes, it was an organization with a goal, but it was also a family. I said it myself. Anakin was my brother. I had many brothers and sisters, and fathers and mothers, and even a strange little green uncle. I don't have that home now. I don't have that family. Almost every friend I've ever had is dead. I've never thought about it exactly in those terms before. It nearly took my breath away just now. Almost every friend I've ever had is dead. Most killed by Sith evil. And I've never lived without the Jedi Order to fall back on, to help me when things went badly. What does it mean to be a Jedi alone? I think you tried to tell me more than once. Your stories about other Jedi who lived without the trappings of the Order, but who still followed the code. Kara Holt, back in Bane's time, cut off from the Republic. And who's that half-Jedi Zane-something-Zane Carrick? He wasn't a part of the Jedi Order, and yet he did good deeds anyway on his own. He relied on his friends and didn't need some official imprimatur to do the right thing. Maybe I can do that. I can't rebuild the Jedi Order, but I can certainly put together the support system it provided. Emotionally, if not in terms of power to resist the Emperor. Maybe starting with Annalene and the claim. No, that would be following the living Force alone, wrapping myself in the present, not worrying about the future, the longer strands, the bigger issues. A Jedi is responsible for balancing both. I'm responsible. Especially now, when there's no one else to do it. Still, Annalene. Wait. Hold on. I just realized something. I'll be back.
Part 4. The Rift. Chapter 36.
The eyepieces of a Tusken narrow and confine the world, but they also bring it into focus. Now, just hours after the suns had set, there was much to be seen on the sprawling ranch southeast of the oasis. Shining yellow through the lens were the domes of the ranch house, a cluster of bubbles beneath the rising moons. Larger than many of the other homes on the desert, it was further lit by security lights on masts. Sheltered decks atop the sand connected the house to its garages. The old man stood on one of these porches, bracing against the nighttime chill. The door to his house was open behind him, and light spilled from it, as did the words of his wife, audible all the way to the northern ridge. Old Ulbrich sought peace outside most evenings, and did so again tonight. Puffing on a cigarra forbidden him by his doctor and wife, Ulbrich looked relaxed and confident in his domain. No one here could tell him what to do. The other person present would have been harder to see, but for his movement. Wrapped against the cold, Langer, the night watch, continued to wear a rut into the ground. Usually the guard stood motionless, but not when the old man was outside. Langer was reputedly a good shot with his rifle, but he hadn't used it in years. Some relation of Ulbricht's wife, he had the easy business of protecting the household. The other sentries were far out in the fields, patrolling the vaporators. Those were what the old man really cared about. The watchful intruders, who'd studied the ranch on previous nights, knew all this. They knew Ulbricht's habits and defenses, and they knew the timing of the sentry land speeder circuits around the ranch. The daylight theft of a vaporator 37 hours earlier had resulted in Ulbricht assigning more sentries to each vehicle, but the routes and timing hadn't yet changed. The members of the raiding party had arrived separately from two different directions. On their final approach, the four had converged, running single file in the Tuscan manner, until they reached their planned stations behind the northern ridge. Through their eyepieces, they all saw the same thing. All was as expected. What remained was to wait for the clouds to pass over the larger moon. When it happened, they moved. The first pair of raiders charged across the ridge, careful not to stumble over their bulky robes. Behind, the remaining two atop the dune lifted their rifles and fired. Several shots to the security lights left the farm in darkness. Langer noticed it first. "Tuscans!" But the call just brought blaster fire in return. Langer dived to avoid the shots, which paused long enough to allow the advanced pair of raiders to strike. The nimbler attacker arrived first, Gaddafi raised. The blunt end of the weapon struck Langer across the face, sending him into unconsciousness. Ulbricht had started to move on the sentry's yell. His rifle sat where it usually did these evenings, just outside the door to his house. But now, the shots from the ridge raked the decking, keeping him from reaching his weapon. He slumped behind a post and yelled to the open door, "Magda! Call for help!" It was too late. With Langer incapacitated, the advanced pair easily reached the house. The stockier assailant kicked in the side door and threw something inside. A flash, and seconds later smoke poured from the building. Coughing, an elderly woman stumbled outside into the waiting, gloved hands of the raiders. Terrified, she wailed in their grip.
"Wile! Wile!"
"I'm coming, Maggie!"
Ulbricht yelled. But he could go nowhere with the shots peppering the deck. When they did pause, it was only because the shooters were charging down from the ridge, bellowing a war cry. The old farmer struggled to reach his feet, but the smaller of the attackers was upon him, swinging his rifle like a club. The butt of the weapon struck the old man in the nose. Ulbricht howled in pain and hit the deck hard, his face bleeding. Magda Ulbricht screamed as the invaders dragged her before the house, in sight of her injured husband. The leader of the foursome set down his rifle and drew a knife from his bandolier. Rusty blade flashing in the moonlight, the rogue figure loomed menacingly over Ulbricht. Magda shrieked again. But even in agony, her husband remained defiant.
"You cussed things couldn't kill me at the claim! I won't beg now!"
The knife wielder nodded. This response was expected. Ulbricht would remain defiant, they all knew, until his wife was threatened. The attackers would turn on Magda and scare her. They might do some cosmetic harm for effect. It would be worse than that if she fought. But both Ulbrichts would remain alive, chastened and terrified. And if the harrowing night didn't convince Wile Ulbricht of the error of his ways, Magda certainly would. It would go entirely according to plan. It had worked before, elsewhere. Perfect. Except for the figure leaping down from the top of the covered porch. Boots landed squarely on the leader's shoulders, knocking him back off his feet. The knife flew from his hand as he struck the ground, and his night vision goggles twisted sideways beneath the Tuscan head wrappings. For moments, he could see nothing at all. He heard only a struggle all around. Shifting the goggles so he could at least see with one eye, The leader tumbled over, desperately trying to reach the rifle on the ground. But the man who had pounced from above was already fighting Magda's former captors. Former, because the woman had fallen free when the figure in light tan charged. He stood between her and them now, quickly dodging one lumbering the Durfee swing after another. He leapt, he ducked, and in one more lightning move, he caught one of the weapons. He flipped backward, taking the Gaddurfi with him. Touching down, he bounded back into the fray with it. The now weaponless raider tumbled backward somehow. It didn't even look like a wrong step to the leader's only available eye, leaving the other marauder to fight on. Gaddurfi clashed loudly, metal sparking in the night. With energy belying her age, Magda scrambled past. The smallest of the invaders, captivated by the nearby combat, did nothing as she collected her bleeding husband and helped him toward the garages and escape. While the Olbrechts fled, the lead attacker at last found the errant rifle. He tried to draw a bead on the dueling rescuer, but again, his facial wrappings were askew, preventing it. Ahead, the Gaddurfi duel drew to a close. The Olbrechts' would-be hero caught his opponent under the arm with the flange of the weapon, producing a high-pitched and very human squeal. Enough! The lead invader ripped off his bandages and night vision goggles and raised his rifle. Eyes unfettered at last, Oren Galt looked into the face of the Olbrecht savior. Ben Kenobi. Oren stared in the darkness, unbelieving for a second.
You!
Then he fired. Ben spun, somehow using the Gaddurfi to deflect the shot. The bolt sizzled past Oren to strike one of the porch supports, right above the head of the smallest would-be Tusken. Startled, the boy turned to run.
Come on, Oren!
Oren fired again. Behind Ben, Oren saw the other two invaders standing, one helping the other. When Ben deflected the second blaster shot, they started to move toward him. Ben turned to look back.
Don't try it, Mullen, he said. Masquerade's over.
On the far side of Oren, a dome opened. The Olbrecht repulsor truck peeled out, Magda at the controls. The vehicle swerved violently away from the house and turned east. The barracks were that way, Oren knew, and more sentries. His kids knew it too.
Dad, go!
With that, Mullen and Vika took off, heading behind the house. Ben looked back with satisfaction, and then stared directly at Oren.
I noticed something today. You don't do so well alone.
Oren turned and ran. In the blackness to the north, Oren saw two sand people rocketing away on speeder bikes. A surreal sight, but one that meant that Mullen and Vika had escaped. His heart pounding, Oren hastened over the dunes to the west.
Why did I park so far away?
Breathless, he glanced behind him. He'd lost his rifle tumbling over the side of a dune, and he wasn't going back for it. Especially not now, as Ben appeared over the rise. The man dropped Mullen's Gaddurfi in the sand. Oren patted at his chest as he ran. He'd replaced his pistol since the afternoon in the hut's abode, but he wasn't about to try to fish for it in the folds of the stupid Tusken garb. Not when his speeder bike was there, its engine already running, thanks to his young assistant. Mask discarded, Jabe Calwell stood between the bikes, frightened out of his wits.
Oren, hurry! He yelled. He's coming!
Oren looked quickly behind him. Ben was still on top of the crest yelling something.
Oren, watch out!
Oren decided he wasn't falling for that. He reached the speeder bike. And in that instant, four figures arose from the night lunging at them. Real sand people. Two Tuskens grabbed at Jabe, yanking him down to the darkness. Another charged at Oren, striking the back of his speeder bike with a Gaddurfi. The hovering vehicle spiraled on the air toward him. Without another thought, Orin leapt onto it. The bike continued to spin with him aboard, and the world spun in Orin's mind, too. He saw Kenobi, still frozen on the hillside. He saw Jabe, clawing at the air in vain as one captor raised a rock to strike him. And he saw the fourth Tusken charging him, Gaderfi held high. Plug-Eye. Orin squeezed the throttle and vanished into the night.
Chapter 37.
Annalene wearily paced the floor of the darkened store. Another night, another missing child. What else was new?
She didn't know what was keeping Jabe, but at least this time, she knew where he was, or thought she did. Orin had driven his kids and Jabe to the Galt Ranch. Callie had continued onward to the claim, as promised. Annalene's exhausted daughter had shared that much before heading back to the residence to collapse. But it was nearing midnight, and no one was answering her pages at the Galt place. She'd even tried to reach Orin on the red comlink, but something must have been wrong with the subspace network. All she heard on the other side were grunts. Sounds like the Gamorreans had made in her store. A wrong connection, to be sure. Who knew Gamorreans even carried comlinks? At least this time she could worry in peace. The store had been empty when Annalene returned from Ben's. Tarlup had closed the claim on schedule, which was more than she could do most nights. The Shista Vanen clerk was staying with a friend locally and would drop off the passkeys in the morning. Annalene reminded herself to thank him. As tightly as she ran the claim, she had to admit, Tar would make a decent manager of his own place someday. The moons shone outside the window behind the counter, casting the interior contours of the claim into bluish shadow. Annalene sighed. The store always seemed so much friendlier at night. During the days, it was either trying to kill her with stress or bore her to death. There was no middle path. She'd grown accustomed over the years to the fact that nothing was ever going to change. Sure, there would be some trends amid the daily disasters and intermittent doldrums. Jabe and Callie would present new and difficult challenges. The customers would become harder to take, and there would continue to be less time for her at the end of each day. But these would be gentle slides, ending only when she could no longer get her hover chair behind the counter. Then they'd check her into the senior center outside Bastine, where no doubt Herbally Napti would be her roommate. Annalene would spend her remaining years explaining that no, she didn't work for the center. The slide had been gentle, until now. The ride had gotten bumpier. The highs had been higher, filling her with excitement and anticipation. And the slow moments she now found interminable. She'd become more concerned about wasting days than wasting profits. It was as if her life had suddenly gained an importance and a weight it previously didn't have, or that she'd denied. She didn't know the reason. Well, something had changed, of course. There was Ben. Since that day out on the Rumbles, every hour she'd spent around Ben had seemed full of life. It staggered belief that, in fact, they'd only known each other for a few hours over the course of half a dozen meetings. So much had happened. The Tuskens had attacked the Oasis, something they hadn't done in years. She'd ridden into a battle and met a most wanted Tusken warlord, who turned out to be a matriarch and mother like herself. She and Orin had both been hassled by big city lowlifes, and the man her kids knew as the jovial uncle had suddenly declared his love for her. And she'd begun to imagine a different life for herself. All this had happened since Ben's arrival from... where? She still didn't know. Unbelievable. "Some people are trouble magnets," her mother had said. And by people, her mother had meant men, and by some, she meant all. It had taken Danar 4 years to pass the Nella Faney stress test. 4 years during which he had to show that, while he might once have been a sand-spitting rowdy, he could stay in the same place and open the store every day. For Annalene's first 2 years working the counter, her mother had counted her pay every week just to see if Danar was keeping his word. A credit short, and he'd have been a no-account dreamer again. But Danar was Tatooine's greatest salesman, because eventually, he sold Nella Faney on himself. Nella wouldn't have let Ben Kenobi within rifle range of her daughter. Her mother's sayings came fresh to her ears. A man with no past is a man with no future. No one with sense moves to Tatooine. Nothing good comes from the Junland wastes. Annalene remembered them well. She'd caught herself saying them to Callie a few times, although she had the integrity to curse herself afterward. Ben had no visible means of support, no occupation, no seeming willingness to commit to anything beyond his solitary existence. And despite his efforts, trouble found him everywhere. But if he was a jinx, why did she feel so much better having him around? Annalene walked to the counter and closed the hinged flap. She wouldn't need her blaster. She wouldn't take her new land speeder out in the night to see if the lights were on at Oren's house. She would imagine that Jabe had gotten caught up in an all-night sabacc game at the golf place with Mullen and Vika and their friends, and she would be fine with that. Because she was going to see Ben again. Sometime. Maybe soon, and everything would be fine. It always was when he was around. Annalene walked through the stacked tables and chairs toward the hallway leading to her residence. Down the darkened hall, something moved in the shadows, giving her a terrifying start.
"Callie, I thought you'd gone to bed,"
Annalene said, heart pounding. She squinted down the hallway.
"Callie?"
A shadowy figure slumped in the doorway to the corridor leading to the garages.
"It's me, Annie."
Oren's voice was scratchy and unusually high-pitched.
"We have to talk."
Oren sat at the bar stool Annalene had pulled down from the counter.
"Don't
turn on the lights," he said. "I never do at this hour," she said, pouring him a drink in the darkness. "The last thing I want is for anyone to think I'm still serving." She withheld the mug from him long enough to survey him. In the moonlight, Oren looked as gray as she'd ever seen him. His hair was messed, his face dirty. Gone were the spiffy clothes from Mos Eisley that day. He looked as if he'd dressed out of the back of his landspeeder.
"You brought Jay back, I hope?"
Oren reached past the mug in her hand and grabbed the bottle instead.
"I don't know where to begin," he said, raising it.
"Try at the start," she said, pitching the contents of the mug into the basin. He looked at her and started to say something. Then he shook his head.
No, I can't tell you that part right now. You'll never..."
"Start somewhere." He clasped his hands together. They were shaking. Gathering himself, he finally spoke.
"I'm out of time. This time tomorrow..."
He paused, looking through the darkness at the chrono behind the counter.
"No, in about 15 hours, I have to come up with 56,000 credits.
Annalene laughed. "What crazy scheme is it now?"
"No scheme,"
Oren said between gulps. He wiped his face with his sleeve.
"Just a plan to save my life, my ranch, everything."
Annalene gaped at him for a moment before looking at the office door.
"Wait, not the Gossam and the Gamorreans?"
She put her hands on the counter and loomed over him.
"That's what the Mos Eisley thing was about?"
Oren looked down in silence.
"Of course,"
Annalene said, wandering half dazed to the end of the counter.
"Of course."
She looked back at him.
"I called you on the direct link. I got a Gamorrean."
His head down, Orin rolled the bottle against his forehead. I lost the comm link in Jabba's townhouse.
Jabba!
Annalene exploded. Orin didn't move. They're going to kill me, Annie.
They'll have to wait in line!
She thundered. She stomped toward him. Is this about the Vaporators? I thought that bank in Mos Eisley loaned you the money to buy the Praetormans. They did, Orin said. 6 years ago, after Danar died. After Lizelle left, my land was the collateral. But the harvest I needed never came in. I never could figure out the formula. He stood abruptly and started to pace. I had to borrow more and more. And they wouldn't loan me anymore, and I couldn't make the interest payments.
So you went to Jabba?
Annalene seethed. Nothing her son had ever done, no previous madcap act of Orin's had ever angered her so.
The Hutt? The criminal?
I went everywhere, Orin said, looking up at her. In the moon rays from the window, he looked like a wounded animal.
No one helps a farmer. And I didn't go to Jabba. When someone offered money, I took it.
No questions asked. Annalene finished. Orin hung his head in shame. Not enough questions, no. And now I need your help. He cast his eyes past her to where the cash box and her data pads rested. I know how you save. You can save me. Save my world.
Annalene fell back against the sink basin, stunned.
You want my money?
To pay the Hutt?
No, Orin said, waving his hand.
I mean, yes, but no, it won't be like that. It'll be our money, and my fields will be your fields. Once we're married.
Annalene rubbed her temples.
I think I'm going to have a stroke.
She looked over at him.
You're still going on about that?
Yes.
We belong together.
Orin put on a smile, but it began to wilt as she watched.
Annalene shook her head. I don't get it.
You're in financial trouble, but you've got enough money to buy me a land speeder just so you can win me over? It must have cost thousands. But thousands won't make any difference to me. My problem's a lot larger. It's going to take your whole cash account to make Jabba go away.
How do you know he will?
He's a Hutt.
I don't know, Orin said. Maybe he won't. But I know the bank won't go away, and I owe them many times as much. He stepped up to the counter again and tried to compose himself. I also talked to them today, he said more calmly. They'd be willing to renegotiate, and that's where the store comes in.
Shocked, Annalene looked around in all directions.
I'm not giving them my store!
It'll be our store, Orin said.
If the claim is added to my land as collateral, they'll negotiate a new payment plan. There's enough in your cash account to get out from under Jabba now. Then the store's cash flow will help me service the loan until we get a good harvest.
He gestured to the darkened shelves behind him. They know what it's worth, what it brings in. They want it operating.
Annalene reeled, struggling to register it all. He folded his hands on the counter, nervous.
They just want an ironclad guarantee that the claim will always be there as collateral. Always operating to service the debt.
I can't guarantee that, Annalene said.
Looking at him, she felt a moment's pity. You know, if you'd asked like a normal person, I'd have tried to help you. You know that.
But even then, I wouldn't be able to just chain myself here for years more. For years. Just to help a friend.
That's why we have to get married,
he said. Orin walked to the counter and lifted the hinge section.
The bank said, You told the bank before you proposed to me?
Annalene nearly split apart with outrage.
How romantic! Did they give their blessing?
They'd be satisfied, Oren said, walking back behind the counter. He reached for her hand.
They'd know you and I were in it together for the long haul, to make both the farm and the claim a success.
He tried to smile again.
They won't foreclose. And Jabba won't foreclose on me. We'll all be fine.
Annalene tried to draw her hand away. She couldn't go along with this, but she didn't want anything to happen to Oren either. For a moment, she wondered whether Jabe knew anything about all this. Had he even returned with Oren? And then she thought of something else and yanked her hand away violently.
Wait,
she said, stepping to the cash box and data pads. How did you know what's in my accounts? And how would the bank know the value of this place?
Head drooping in the low light, Oren sighed.
I made copies of the records this morning after you left.
You did what?
Annalene's mouth fell open.
And I made some holograms.
Annalene slammed her hands on the back counter.
It made sense now. Oren getting her out for the day.
A family trip to Mos Eisley to get a new land speeder, that would do it.
Did Tar Lup help you snoop through my files?
No. But you had lent me the code so he could work. I logged in before Tar showed up.
Get out,
Annalene ordered.
Annie.
Don't
Annie me,
she said. She turned her back on him.
I won't help you fix this. Get out.
Oren approached her.
Annie, they're going to kill me.
Standing at the end of the counter, she said nothing. There weren't words.
Annie, I'm begging,
he said, choking up.
You've got to marry me. The bank says, just go,
Annalene said, tearing up. She felt his presence behind her, could hear his fast breathing. He'd ruined his life and was here now, invading the one place that was absolutely hers, trying to take it away.
Just go.
Okay,
Oren said, arm sagging. He turned around and started to walk, but after a second, Annalene heard the footsteps stop. Oren lingered behind the counter with her, calculating.
Maybe there's another way,
he said. Annalene looked back but said nothing.
The store's just gotta be in the family,
Oren said, stepping toward her, eyes wild.
Maybe the kids.
Annalene winced. It was almost comical now.
I really don't think Mullen is marriage material.
No, Oren said. But I could marry Callie.
Annalene's eyebrows shot up.
What?
Oren raised his hands to explain.
She's nearly 20.
In 3 years!
Before Oren could say more, Annalene's right fist struck his jaw. Hand on his bleeding mouth. Oren looked at her, betrayed and bewildered.
Get out!
Annalene yelled, shoving in an attempt to force him out from behind her bar. But the larger man turned instead, his hands grabbing her shoulders like a vice. Rage entered his eyes.
I don't care how it happens, but I'm done asking. I've got to save myself, can't you see?
Annalene struggled.
Let go!
Oren wrestled with her in the cramped space. Overturned bottles smashed to the floor. His anger grew, and he shook her. Annalene wailed.
Annie, just listen!
A blaze of blue light lit the darkness, striking the wall just behind Oren's shoulder. Annalene, still frozen in his clutches, Oren looked across the bar. There in the moonlight stood Callie, in her nightshirt, rifle quivering in her hands.
Get away from her!
Callie yelled.
Callie, you wouldn't shoot me.
Don't bet on it!
Callie fired again, shattering a bottle just to his left.
I've never liked you people.
Her face twisted in anger.
You always take advantage of Mom,
And now you're trying to ruin Jabe. Now let her go and tell me what's going on here.
Orin released Annalene and shook his head.
Callie, he said, you just don't get it. None of you do.
He looked up, his face lit by the light from outside.
Jabe is dead.
Chapter 38.
Ayark looked down at the exposed face of the unconscious settler in Tuscan clothing. Grotesque, as flesh always was. Ayark was glad it was nighttime, but she could tell the human was not much older than her Adine had been. His forehead bled from the rock he had been struck with. He still breathed only because Ayark wanted to know something. Why is he here? Curiosity had driven Ayark to the ranch in the first place. The vaporator thieves from the day before were the dregs of the clan, but they'd stumbled on a gap in the area patrolled by the Smiling One's posses. Ayark had insisted on returning with them after dark to learn more. The findings had disappointed. By pilfering the worthless water-making device, the young fools had put the local farmer on alert. His house lacked sufficient defenses, but even so, Ayark had no faith in her companion's ability to strike it. But before she could turn her band back to the pillars, the false Tuscans had arrived. Ayark's eye was good enough to tell imposters, even at a distance through darkness. The worst of her people didn't comport themselves like the costumed bumblers. Then Ben had arrived, galloping past an Aziope. Ayark had instantly resolved to stay, ordering the others to hollow out a hiding place near the pretenders' parked speeder bikes. Alone, atop the western ridge, she'd seen an initially weaponless Ben fight the costumed settlers. The fight had confirmed what she'd suspected.
"You are Ben," she said to him now.
"Yes," Ben said. He stood halfway down the rise, looking down at her and her companions, all standing guard over the motionless youth. Ayark strained to remember the words Kishik had spoken in their exchanges so long ago, but they came to her now when needed.
"You are a great warrior."
Ben chuckled. "Yes, I suppose I am."
"Great warrior,"
Ayark repeated, annoyed.
"Wars do not," he began, still grinning in the moonlight. Seeing that his expression offended her, he changed it. "Never mind."
Ben walked cautiously down into the depression. He looked different now. Dark robe removed, he wore a light tunic, giving him more range of movement. And yet he did not shiver in the wind. He gestured to the prisoner, collapsed and guarded at the bottom of the dugout.
"This boy, Jabe, is the son of my friend. You've met her."
"Annalene,"
Ayark pronounced without thinking.
"Yes, you did hear me say it," he replied.
For some reason, the human's words were easier for Ayark to understand, and he understood her. Was it his magic somehow?
"Release Jabe," he said slowly, "so I can take him to her."
"No,"
Ayark said. Ben raised his hand and waved it before Ayark.
"You will release him."
"No,"
Ayark said.
Ben nodded.
"All right." He put his hand down. Ayark watched warily as he began to pace, keeping a generous distance between himself and Ayark's party.
"All right.
You should release him then," Ben said.
"It is right. You remember I brought you your son the day of the massacre."
"My son was dead,"
Ayark said, words dripping with bile. With that, she turned and stepped over Jabe's body. Turning back so Ben could see, she suspended her Gaderfi above Jabe's head, ready to plunge the heavy end downward into his skull.
"You takes Annalene a dead son," she announced. "It is right."
Her companions fanned out Gaderfi ready. Ben reached for the fold of his tunic. In the dark,
Ayark couldn't see where he carried the weapon, but she was sure it was there.
I hoped we could bargain, he said calmly. I guess you're not a transactional people.
Ayark stood silent, not understanding. Somehow sensing her confusion, Ben spoke.
Trade. Tuscans don't trade.
No! Tuscans take!
Ayark shouted, raising her Gaderfi. At the sound of her voice, two young warriors charged Ben from either side. Ben swept his hands upward. The fighters went aloft, carried by an unseen windstorm. They landed to either side of the pit, while one of the Gaderfi pinwheeled through the air right over Ayark's head. The other weapon buried itself into the ground to her left.
Ben hadn't even looked at the attackers.
Wait!
She told the others in their language. Theirs was a mad attack, but it told her again how powerful he was. Yet Ben had chosen not to kill her companions. Was it intentional?
Ben looked over his shoulder. Any forces the Ulbrichts reach will secure the house first before searching here. There's still time for us all to get what we want, Ayark. I want the boy.
No,
Ayark said, bringing her weapon down again to a menacing position over Jabe's body. She poked at the teenager's clothing with the blunt end of the Gaderfi.
It is forbidden for Tuscan to unmask, but for a settler to wear the mask of a Tuscan.
It is indescribably worse, Ben said. That's your belief, isn't it?
It is believed.
Ayark gripped the Gaderfi.
Jabe dies.
Then we are at an impasse,
Ben said, pulling out the metal weapon that Ayark had seen before. He activated it, and a spear of blue energy lit the gully. Sherrod Head had named it once for her. A lightsaber. Ben walked toward the pit.
I won't let you kill Jabe, no matter what he's done.
We are born to die,
Ayark said.
Maybe you are, Ben said. But it is possible to be ready to die and still prefer to live. And I think you do.
Her gemstone eyepiece glinted purple in the light.
You are wrong.
I think not, Ben said, staring at her. I've heard the settlers talk about you, Ayark, and seen your actions. You don't strike just for menace. You have goals.
He lowered the lightsaber slightly.
Like at the Oasis store. You came for Annalene. Why?
Ayark stood motionless, astounded. How could a human know anything that motivated a Tuscan? Ben paused for a moment.
Ah, he said. I see. You thought she was like me, and like Sherrod Het, he said.
If you knew Sherrod, you must have known that he was not like the other settlers. He carried a weapon like this. Ben moved the shining lightsaber to and fro, slicing the air before Ayark and her captive.
And he could do other things.
Sherrod, wizard,
Ayark said. Ben stopped moving the lightsaber.
Yes, he would have seen.
You are his kind,
Ayark said, mesmerized.
You knew him.
I am of his kind, yes, and I knew him.
Ben's eyes narrowed in the light as he searched carefully for words.
Sherrod Het left my people many years ago. He brought his skills to you, became a Tuscan.
He looked away gravely.
He was not supposed to do this. But you took him in.
Yes.
Struck with the notion, Ben looked down at Ayark.
You weren't his wife, were you?
Ayark shook her head.
No. Kishik lived as my sister when she lived.
Ah, I didn't know her name.
The recovered attackers from earlier gave Ayark long and imploring looks. Of course, they were wondering. It was madness conversing with so powerful a human. and on settler lands, too. But Ayak realized this was the moment she'd been working towards since the massacre in the gorge.
Ben will join us,
she said abruptly. Ben seemed startled. Me join you?
Yes, as Sharad did.
Ayak kicked at Jabe's shoulder.
To save Jabe. That would be what you call a trade. A Tusken trade.
Ben mused for a moment, as if contemplating a possibility he'd never even considered.
The sand people in the pillars are few,
Ayak said.
Ben joins, leads war parties.
Ben gestured toward her. But your people have a war leader, Ayak. A formidable one, in you. Ayak sneered. Whether he intended to flatter her made no difference. Whatever Ayak was, Ben was different. Something greater.
You would attract others,
she said.
Some lives who remember Sharad. They would follow. Sand people will thrive.
Never in Ayark's memory had such an offer been made to an outlander. Even Sharad was made to endure trials. And yet, this human actually seemed amused by the invitation. Well, Ben said under his breath, that would certainly be one way for me to stay out of sight.
What?
Nothing, he said, seriousness returning to his face. Ayak paused, suddenly apprehensive. Not about the impending return of centuries, but rather wondering whether to speak the rest. She'd told herself many times she was not as superstitious as the others. But some things handed down had meaning, and having seen Sharad's feats, she was inclined to believe this thing.
They says a warrior will come from the sky to lead us. He will grow mighty. Generations unborn will walk in fear.
For a moment, Ben seemed puzzled. Ayak wondered if she had spoken the words properly. This was a prophecy, he asked. A dream someone had?
Those are the same thing.
And you desire this end?
Tuskens want, yes.
It was a foolish question for Ben to ask, Ayak thought. Had he not heard of the destruction wrought years earlier on the Tusken camp, where all present died regardless of age? Sand people could not live where such threats existed unopposed. If Sharad had not been the arrival of legend, then perhaps Ben was instead. Yet for reasons that eluded Ayak, Ben seemed troubled by the prospect of gaining immense power. He bowed slightly. I cannot join you, he said. No offense intended. I recognize what I'm giving up, but it can't happen.
Then boy dies, and we die as killing him, and clan ends.
She lifted the Gaderfi again over Jabe's head.
It is right.
Ben looked down, seemingly disappointed. Readying his lightsaber, he started to close the distance with the Tuskens. Then he stopped. He looked over at the lone speeder bike. You saw who was with the boy? Ayak nodded.
The settler leader, the smiling one.
The smiling? Ben's face lit with recognition. Orin Galt. You mean Orin Galt?
Orin Galt.
Ayak sounded out.
I will kill Orin Galt and all who follows.
She spoke aloud the fury that had been forming since seeing the imposters.
By day he strikes us. By night he schemes. So to strike us again by day.
Ben lowered his weapon. You mean Orin has done something like this before?
Settlers have avenged attacks that did not fall.
Ayak said.
I don't know what settlers do, but I knows what Tuskens do.
Quickly, Ayak named some locations. Ben's knowledge of the geography of the desert was not the same as hers, and he asked questions in response. She answered them. At last, he deactivated his lightsaber and returned it to its hiding place.
Ayak, your people have been wronged. What Oren has done is forbidden for my people. Taboo. And he has led Jave into it. If you let me take the boy, I will see that no more harm comes from either of them.
Ayak stood fast.
Vengeance must be ours!
She studied Ben.
And you don't speak for the settlers!
Ben scratched his hairy chin.
No, you're right, I don't. This isn't even my responsibility. Not anymore. But neither can you get satisfaction alone. You don't have the forces to threaten the Oasis, do you?
Yark said nothing.
I didn't think so.
Ben nodded to the warriors he'd let live.
If you'll defer for a day, I will find a way that you can get justice.
Yark didn't know what justice meant. Kishik and Sherrod both had been full of nonsense terms, but she caught Ben's drift.
I must see this justice,
she said, hissing the last syllable.
To know.
Ben nodded.
I think I understand. There may be a way.
Speak.
That's what I propose,
Ben concluded a couple of minutes later.
But it requires bringing the settlers to your, doorstep.
As Ayak looked back on her junior warriors, doubts quickly filled her mind.
Plan works, she said. I would see. But plan risks the clan.
I understand, but you need not worry, Ben said. I would not endanger them, nor you. I would be there to protect your people.
Uthman lies!
Ayak snapped.
No outlander would care what happens to Tuskins.
At her feet, Jabe woke up, moaning. Opening his eyes, he saw Ayak overhead.
Uh-oh,
he said in a tiny voice.
Hold still, son,
Ben advised.
We're at a critical stage.
He looked back at Ayak.
I told you what I would do. Will you free him?
Ayak looked back at her feckless companions. Unaware of what had been discussed, they fidgeted at a sound from far away. Land speeders, heading toward the ranch from the northeast. There wasn't much time to make a decision, and Ayak was inclined to reject Ben's proposal. It was impossible to think he could succeed. No one could. She clutched the Gaderfi.
I say.
Another sound came from the south, interrupting her. Movement. The warrior stumbled backward, afraid.
The settlers,
one called to Ayak.
We are surrounded.
It's all right, Ben said, walking toward the southern dune. Just a second.
Don't leave me!
Jave screamed. Ben was gone for just over 3 seconds when an Eyopi trotted over the southern crest. Ben followed, carrying a bundle in his arms. I forgot I parked near here, he called. The Eyopi wandered into the middle of the mystified Tuskins. At Ayak's feet, it began nuzzling at Jave's cheek with its snout. Ayak looked back at the bundle Ben was carrying. It was moving.
What is that?
A bleat came from the shadowy mass, and Ben set it upon the ground. Dark cloth opened. A young Eyopi, just a few hours old, ambled toward its mother.
That is not from here,
Ayak said. She knew the old man who lived here kept no livestock.
Hmm? Ah, yes,
Ben said, musing as he watched mother and child together.
When I realized Oren was targeting this ranch, I had to get here quickly, so I had no choice but to ride. But Rue had just given birth this morning, and I couldn't leave the child.
Ayak stared at him.
How?
Ben picked up the cloth. I carried him. In my cloak. He shook out the garment and put it on. He slept pretty well. Ayark looked at the Eope with the two children, one human. She knew how far it was to Ben's home. He had ridden across the desert with an infant Eope in his lap? It occurred to her Ben would do anything to return Annalene's child to her, just as he had returned Adin. And so, he might be capable of anything. Light swept over the eastern ridge.
They have come,
Ayark said. She poked Jabe lightly in the shoulder with the point of her weapon.
You must go. I agree to Ben's trade.
Ben looked around. He spied the speeder bike. I need to get to the oasis fast, but... He looked apprehensively at the Eopes. I can't ride alongside, and I can't carry us all. Ayark gestured, and warriors stepped up to lead the Eopes away. At least they were capable of that, she thought. The night was still young, and she had much to prepare as well. Helping a confused Jabe toward the speeder bike, Ben looked back with apprehension.
You won't eat them, will you?
We do what we want,
Ayark said, offended. The insinuation that they wouldn't was worse than any assumption about their diet.
But no one acts but I say.
That much was true now. Ben climbed aboard the vehicle in front of Jabe. I'll return, and if I fail, the next time you see me, I will do as you ask, I swear.
I will make sure of it,
Ayark said. With that, the Tuskens and their animal charges vanished over the dune and into the night.
Chapter 39
In the darkness of the claim, Annalene staggered against the counter.
What? What did you say?
Jabe is dead,
Orin repeated. He knelt beside the shards of the bottles on the floor at his feet. Down in the darkness, his mind raced. Annalene would have to learn sometime that the Tuskens had taken Jabe. But he'd hoped to put it off until after he'd settled his financial affairs. Now he wondered what to say. Could he say Jabba's Tufts had struck at him, killing Jabe instead? That would sell Annalene on the danger Orin was in, but it might solidify her resolve not to pay the criminals. No, he thought as he picked up the pieces. There might be a way instead to ensure that she did help him. And it involved the truth. Starting at a certain point, of course.
The Tuskens killed him,
he said, rising with the shards.
I was bringing him back here from my place when I broke down. Plug Eye got him.
The Tuskens?
Annalene grabbed at him.
Where?
Orin dumped the glass into the refuse bin. Out on the desert. You won't find him. They took him away.
Then he might not be dead!
Callie yelled, tears glinting in her eyes. Annalene shoved past Orin, finally escaping from behind the counter.
I've got to go,
she said, heading toward the gun racks. She looked back at Callie.
Get dressed.
Callie handed her rifle to her mother and ran back into the residence.
What are you waiting for, Orin? Activate the settler's call!
Orin stood taller, having formulated his plan.
At first light, he said, you know there's nothing anyone can do until then.
He stepped forward from behind the bar.
But I swear, I'll call out every vehicle we've got until we find him.
You need to stay.
Not a chance!
Annalene looked back at Orin.
Trigger the call or I will!
Orin wiped his hands on a rag from the bar.
No one will come at this hour.
You'll just scare the Tuskens farther into the wastes. Or push Plug Eye to do something desperate.
You're going to have to trust me, Annie. Nobody knows Pluggy like me. I've been chasing this guy for years.
Annalene glowered. Some expert.
Plug Eye's a female.
What?
I met her again on the range with Ben that day, she told him, grabbing a satchel.
Oren stared, puzzled.
He started to ask more, but then returned to the immediate problem. He walked toward her, wary of where her rifle was pointing. I promise you. Wait, and I'll have the Grand Army of the Oasis out there.
Annalene shook her head.
Nothing, it seemed, was going to keep her from searching. Callie ran back in wearing warm clothes, and her mother passed her a rifle.
Annalene looked back at him in anger.
Why didn't you tell me this when you came in?
I had to make sure you understood first,
Oren said. I can't help you find Jabe tomorrow if I've got the Hutt's goon showing up.
He walked to the gun counter and picked up a rifle of his own, figuring a physical show of support would be good now.
Look, I'll ride out with you. We can have a quick look.
He turned to face Annalene.
Then we've got to come back here. Forget the business about the store. You'll give me the money to make Jabba go away.
Jabba?
Callie repeated, stunned.
And I'll devote the rest of my life to finding Jabe.
Oren struggled to look earnest. And if it's already too late, I'll exterminate the lot of them.
You lost Danar to these monsters. I lost a son. Do it my way, and it'll be...
At the front of the store, the door clicked open. Rifle in hand, Oren looked up. Annalene and Callie were already moving, dashing up the long aisle through the darkness. Their weapons clattered to the floor.
Jabe! Jabe!
Startled, Oren followed.
There, through the open doorway, Jabe was staggering in.
A great brown robe, a bit too large for him, blew in the night wind as he entered. In a second, his mother and sister were at his side.
You're hurt?
Annalene said, looking at the dried gash on his forehead.
It's okay, Mom, Jabe said weakly. Ben looked at it.
Ben?
Oren and the women said it at the same time.
He brought me home,
the boy said, looking tired and bewildered.
Oren tromped forward, weapon raised. Is Kenobi here?
No, Jabe said. He saved me from Plug Eye. I don't know how he did it, but he did.
He rubbed his bruises.
I guess I was wrong about him.
Annalene embraced her son again.
This is Ben's cloak,
she blurted as she grasped his collar.
He thought I was cold,
Jabe said, pulling away.
Oren stood dumbfounded.
Kenobi had seen him in Tusken guise at the Ulbrick place, yes. But Oren had assumed that the real Tuskens had killed both Ben and Jabe. If Ben lived, that changed everything. As the women turned back into the store for water and a med pack, Oren sidled up to confer quietly with Jabe.
Where did Kenobi go?
You left me out there,
Jabe said icily.
Never mind that. Where did he go?
I don't know, Jabe said. But he was in a hurry.
Looking first to make sure his mother and sister were still in the back, he slipped the cloak slightly open so Oren could see that he still wore the Tusken costume underneath.
He didn't want the locals here to see me in this,
he whispered.
Huh.
Oren wondered at that. Why didn't Ben want to expose Jabe? There could be sinister reasons. Kenobi thought he had something now.
Leverage.
How would he use it? To blackmail Oren for money? Or maybe to stop him from marrying Annalene? Oren decided it didn't matter which. Something had to be done about him.
Don't say anything about tonight,
he urged Jabe quietly.
Don't tell me what.
Annalene stood nearby, holding the chair she'd brought for Jabe. She dropped it on the floor.
There's something else, isn't there?
Something you've done to try to pay off your debts?
She looked at Jabe and then back at Oren.
Was that what tonight was about?
What have you done? She demanded, What else have you done?
What I had to do, Orin said. And right now, I could be in trouble.
You're already in trouble. A different kind of trouble, Orin said. Legal trouble. The kind that will make it difficult for me to walk around freely, even if I get clear of the criminals and the bank.
Annalene raised her hands to the ceiling.
Why not? You've ruined everything else in your life.
She took a deep breath and grabbed his sleeve.
Orin, that's enough, she said, yanking him toward the doorway. Leave and don't come back. I'll have the stuff in your office here cleaned out and sent to you.
You don't understand, Orin said. This trouble. I'm in it, yes. But Jabe's in it, too.
Annalene and Callie looked at the boy, baffled.
Jabe?
Standing in the shadows, Jabe looked down and swallowed.
Yes, I'm in it.
His mother gawked.
What?
What have you done?
It doesn't matter,
Orin said.
He pointed his finger in Jabe's face. What matters is Jabe will go away too if it comes out. But it won't come out. Only one other person knows. And I'm going to take care of that.
Overwhelmed and confused, Annalene seemed not to know where to look. Orin changed that by getting in her face.
Did you hear me? I can make sure Jabe stays free,
he said, snarling.
There wasn't any reason not to let his anger show. I've been helping your family for years.
Bringing business here, watching over you. It's time you paid me back!
So you'd cracking well better help me stay alive in the next 24 hours.
He jabbed his finger in the direction of the cash box.
That means we pay Jabba off tomorrow. Me and you. You're in this with me whether you want to be or not.
Callie moved to her mother's side.
Mom, what's going on? What's going to happen?
I don't know, sweetie,
Annalene said, looking between Jabe and Orin.
But I think we need help.
Orin looked up at the chrono. A little over 14 hours until Jabba's deadline. The hoodlums would be serious this time. However it had happened, and it was still a mystery to Orin, Mosip Benid and his minions had been embarrassed today in the townhouse. Orin didn't expect that anyone in Jabba's organization could let that happen twice. Not and continue to draw breath. They'd have to be paid and taken care of. But he had to deal with Kenobi first. Re-energized, he opened the front door to the night. I'll be back in time tomorrow. I'll fix it all. You'll see.
Her arms around her children, Annalene shuddered.
I see a monster,
she said.
I'm a farmer, Orin replied. And I'm going to save my farm.
Adjusting the settings on his rifle, he called back to Jabe.
Kenobi, did he say where he was going, boy? Did he say anything?
Jabe responded coolly.
He had a message for you.
For me?
The tall man paused, curious.
Yes,
Jabe said.
Turn back now.
Orin's eyes widened as he weighed the words. Then he stepped out into the night.
Annalene locked another door and barred it. She'd changed the passcodes on all the electronic locks, even from the entryway from the garages. Tar Lup would just have to knock in the morning. She'd thought then about entering Orin's satellite office in the store, until she remembered Jade needed tending to back in the house. Her son sat under the lonely light at her kitchen table. Ben's cloak was off and being folded lovingly by Callie. Underneath, Jabe wore the rags of a Tusken Raider. He made no move to hide them, but he looked embarrassed and humiliated. Seeing her mother stare, Callie spoke to the air.
I think I'm going to have ammunition in every fight from now on.
Jabe shook his head.
It's a long story, he mumbled. You won't believe it.
Annalene pulled up a chair and sighed tiredly.
Try me.
Jabe started speaking slowly at first, and then gained speed, rambling from one part of his young life to another. His lost father, his hated job, his need to fit in with the Galts, whom he saw as doing something with their lives, and his desperate desire to please Orin, a man of stature and independence. And he spoke of the favor Orin had asked in Mos Eisley.
"He said it was a prank," Jabe said. "We were going to dress up and scare the Ulbricks."
The air went out of Annalene's body. She sagged.
"Weil Ulbrich. My best customer. Weil Ulbrich."
Callie brought her mother a warm drink. The mug shook in Annalene's hands. She put it down without tasting it.
"Zed was supposed to go with them, but he couldn't," Jabe said. "Warren had a whole trove of the Tuscan gear from the settlers' call rescue, I guess. I thought, I don't know, that maybe this was my chance to get on Orin's lead support team. By dressing up like the people who murdered your father and scaring an old man."
Annalene was numb as a droid at this point. "Makes perfect sense to me." She waved aimlessly.
"Continue." "It was just supposed to have been rifles on stun," Jabe said, his voice faltering. "It was to teach old Weil a lesson for showing up Orin all the time. Nobody likes Ulbrich anyway, Mom. You know that."
Wraith-like, she rose and found the med pack on the kitchen counter. There was still that raging bruise on Jabe's forehead. She could treat that, even if she had no idea what was going on inside his skull. Jabe breathed faster, the details of the rage spilling forth as Annalene cleaned the cut. He told of knocking Weil down, and of Mullen and Vika's capture of Magda Ulbrich. He told of Ben's arrival and the Galt's subsequent departure. And he told of the real Tuscans appearing and the ambush. His words growing quicker and louder, he moved his head against Annalene's efforts to treat him.
"Ow! Ow!"
"Do you want me to stop?" Annalene asked, pulling back the applicator.
"No,"
Jabe said, tears in his eyes.
"I want to feel it."
Forlorn, he looked up at her.
"Do you want me to stop?"
She shook her head.
"I need to know." "You said Ben saved you?"
Jabe nodded.
"I woke up and Orin was gone, and Plug-Eye was there, and Ben was talking to them. In basic," he said, puzzled. "Somehow, he was talking to them, bargaining for me."
Every word seeming to remind him of how close he'd come to the end, he'd struggled to catch his breath.
"Mom, they were going to kill me. Or worse."
He blinked rapidly, tears finally falling. Annalene put down the applicator and pulled his head close to her chest.
"I know. But Ben was there."
"Yeah,"
Jabe said, sniffling. "I don't know what he said, but it worked. And he took me out of there."
He looked up at her, his eyes red.
"But the Galts just left me. Orin ran. It's okay. He ran. And the others were already gone,"
he said, his voice rising with alarm.
"And Mullen and Vika, back with the old woman, they acted like they were really going to hurt her, Mom. And I hit that old man."
"And that's not okay," she said, stroking his blood-matted hair. "But we've all found out a lot tonight."
"I wanted something to do," he said, voice faltering. "I've just been so sick of the store. I wanted some action. But this wasn't like going with the posses. This was wrong."
Annalene just nodded.
"Well, I'm glad to hear that."
She released him and dried his eyes.
"Did you tell all this to Ben?"
she asked, placing the bandage.
"All of it."